an old mansion in the Shenandoah Valley hangs a portrait of a cavalier, a big, broad-shouldered, giant cavalier. In his own handwriting, beneath this portrait, are these words: "Yours to count on. Yours to count on." I guess that's as good a definition as you'll ever find of the word friend. Yours to count on. Yours to count on. This week, in my travels, and I have taken 19 plane trips this week. I mean, I've taken 19 flights this week. And in my travels this week, or this past week, I talked to a man who literally broke my heart. A man of some means, and I think a kindly man, or kind man. And I asked him if he had any friends. And he started naming his friends. And he said, "There's my wife and my children." And then he began to stutter. And I grieved a bit. And I began to thank God for my friends. I guess if any preacher in America has people he can count on, it's the fellow who's speaking to you right now. On any given Sunday, I get so many little thoughtful reminders. The college kids. All I did for them not long ago was take them out to buy them a Arby's beef sandwich. They ran out of beef, and I think they end up got some turkey, and I'm not sure if they killed a hog or not. Somebody said that Polish sausage is made of retarded pigs, but that's dedicated to my ex-Polak friends in the service tonight. But and just all I did was buy him a Arby's and some French fries and a cold drink and jump over a rope into a fish pond. You hate me. Vacation Bible School, I get up and boys and girls say, "You try to trick me, trick a preacher." And I say, "You hate me." "No." "Yes, you do." "No." "Yes, you do." "No." When I say to you, "You hate me," there's a strange silence that makes me feel like the fellow with whom I talked this last week. But I could not begin to tell you the sweet remembrances, lovely notes, encouraging things that folks do. And I got thinking this week as I flew back from talking to this brother who started to count his friends and found it very difficult to get back past his own family. I got on the airplane and I began to thank God for my friends. I've thought about in the recent trials in our church, if you could call them trials, but the load we've carried and the many, many reversals that we've had, not inside the church family, but attacks from without. I got thinking about my friends, and you'll indulge me in my folly, and Shakespeare will not be concerned in heaven when I share this with you, but I wrote these few words to you. It's called "Dear Friend." It is dark. I cannot see the way. Has been weeks since I have known a day. I believe I would find strength to stay if I could hear your voice. I'm alone. I feel the prickly goad. It now seems I tread a lonesome road. Yet I feel I make and bear the load if you would touch my hand. I am weak. My hopes now seem so few. It appears my dreams will ne'er come true. But methinks I could find strength anew if I could see you smile. I am sick. What illness? I can't tell. I have fears. My sickness seems to dwell. Yet I think that I would soon be well could I but see your face. I'm perplexed. I fear I may soon bend. I'm worried about my downward trend. Yet I know the hurt will surely end if you were near to me. I wrote that on an airplane, thinking about you and all the encouragement that you give to me. I got thinking about what somebody said the other day to me. In fact, about a dozen somebodies have said this. They said, Pastor, when you fly at night, I can't sleep. I can't sleep if you don't sleep. Boy, you're sure sleepy tonight, I'll tell you for sure, if you've only slept when I slept this week. But, Pastor, I can't sleep if you don't sleep. And I wrote, He who, when thou art hungry, cannot dine. When thou art standing, can't recline. When you're awakened, cannot sleep. When you're happy, cannot weep. When you're needy, cannot keep. When thou art weary, cannot rest. When thou art saddened, cannot jest. When thou art lonely, cannot leave. When thou art happy, cannot grieve. When thou art working, cannot play. When thou art slandered, cannot sway. When thou art weeping, cannot shout. When thou art winning, cannot pout. When thou art laughing, cannot cry. When thou art boring, as if I ever were, cannot sigh. He is your friend. And I guess all of us want friends. I do. People often say, I wish I were like John Rice and Jack Hiles and people like that. Don't care, give a flip by what folks think. If you were like John Rice and Jack Hiles, you'd give a big flip about what folks think. The only difference is we give a bigger flip about what God thinks. But I wrote the greatest needs. Two hungers in life soon gain control. Two needs has each man he must extol. Two quests most pursued by young and old. Two appetites that we firmly hold. Two things essential to keep man whole. Our food for the body, a friend for the soul. All of us want friends. Then as I was flying, I got thinking about Jim Salee and the loss that I feel about Jim Salee. I got thinking about this. Did you know that if a lady loses her husband, they have a name for her? She's a widow. If a husband loses a wife, they have a name for him. He's a widower. If a child loses parents, they have a name for that child. He's an orphan. But if somebody loses a friend, you can't describe that loss. There's no word for that. And I wrote, a widower is one who lost a wife and liveth solitaire in life. An orphan's a child without a dad or a mom to love and make him glad. A widow is one whose lonely fate was parting with her chosen mate. But impotent are words of mortal men to make a human language blend and name the one who's lost a friend. I think we minimize the friendship relationship far too much. I thought about how close we are as a church family. I hope that nobody can come to our church without feeling how close we are. I hope that folks can feel like we like it here. And we're not here because the preacher said you're going to go to hell if you don't come. Everybody knows that's not true. You're going to go to hell if you don't give money to the college fund. We're here because we like it here. And people often say, how do these folks sit around here so late? Shoot, more than half of the folks in this room tonight would love for us to stay overtime. Well, five of us would. But we like it here. You visitors can't understand that. This is our ball game. This is our Super Bowl. This is our movie. This is our World Series. This is our night out. This is our bowling league. This is our skating rink. This is all of it wrapped up one package. And in case you wonder about it, we have more fun right now than you have in any of those places, you see. You say, I can't understand it. I know. That's why we have these services. Get you born again so you can understand it, you see. And then you can figure it out. And I got thinking about a friend. A friend is one who understands the motives underneath my plans. A friend is one who always sees the real me, yet never flees. A friend is one who always knows the pain I feel, yet never shows disgust with me when I am weak and comprehends the words I speak. A friend is one so soon to hear the threats that often make me fear. A friend, I guess, just plain to see, is really just another me. And that's what we are here at First Baptist Church. And those are some of my thoughts that I wanted to bore you with. And don't forget, a friend is one who never gets bored. When somebody in his folly thinks he's a poet. And then, of course, my mind turned to that closest friend when I was flying through the sky. That friend about whom it speaks, I think, in Proverbs 18:24. There is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. That friend about whom Charles Weigel wrote when he said, I would love to tell you what I think of Jesus. Since I found in him a friend so strong and true, I would tell you how he changed my life completely. He did something that no other friend could do. Or another wrote, what a friend we have in Jesus. All our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Or that beautiful song, there's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. No, not one. No, not one. Or that one, Jesus is the friend you need. Such a friend is he indeed. He who knoweth every tear. He can banish every fear. Jesus is the friend you need. By the way, that's what you need tonight. You folks tucked out here, you're a visitor tonight, and you're trying everything in the world to make you happy. What you're looking for is Jesus. You don't know it. He's what you need. Last night you went out to some nightclub and you got drunk hoping you'd get happy, and you woke up with a brown taste in your mouth this morning, everything going bad, and you still have that thirst inside your breast and that hunger inside your soul. Jesus is the friend you need. Those of you that took a nervous hand and put it to a nervous arm and stuck a needle in your vein and put something there that make you escape reality, what you don't realize is the only thing in the world that's going to satisfy that something is something out of the world. And Jesus is the friend you need. You folks last night that had to escape to some country club, which is just a dignified bar room. I had to escape to some country club for some dance or get-together. And by the way, I hope if anybody in this church goes to one of these drinking parties at your company or at your plant during this Christmas season, I hope somebody spills whiskey all over you and you smell like a bar for weeks and folks know where you've been. I hope you get caught up with. In God's dear name, don't you be a part of this heathen, Christ-rejecting, sinful, sensuous world. They'll laugh at us, but let us be different. Let us be different. Jesus is the friend you need. I've always been a bit jealous of Moses, about whom it is said in Exodus 33 and verse 11, God spake to Moses as a friend. Last Thursday night, I brought the message honoring Dr. John Rice at his 80th birthday celebration. And I was sitting on the platform reliving the times, and as a kid preacher, I used to hope to get to see Dr. Rice personally. And how that I used to hope that maybe I could save enough money to go to a sword conference someday and get to shake his hand, get his autograph. And I recall the time I put my hand in his for the very first time and how pleased I was and how thrilled I was, like a little leaguer trying to shaking hands with Mickey Mantle or Hank Aaron or some great baseball star. And all of a sudden I was consumed with the thought, now for almost 20 years, I've been sharing pulpits with him across this country, and he's my friend. He said the other night, he was talking about me, and he said, I'm glad to have Dr. Jack Hiles. He's introducing me somewhere. Dr. Jack Hiles is here, and he said, Dr. Jack Hiles He and I are buddies. I felt like a little bus kid out in the alley when I walked down the hall alley and say, guess what we are? We're buddies. That's what we are. We're buddies. And I felt like they must feel to think that John Rice is my friend. Ah, but listen, think of it. The God that made John Rice is my friend, too. And I have the joy of speaking to him as a friend would speak to a friend. I am having one of my books, this statement, happy is the man who has a friend. Happier is the man who is a friend. Happiest is the man who has a friend and is a friend. And so tonight, I want to turn from our thoughts we've been having for a few minutes of having a friend to discussing the matter of being a friend. Not just being one to the friend, but being a friend of the King. The King's friend. Of all the titles in the Bible, the one I envy the most is that one given to Abraham. Oh yes, I'd like to be called, as was David, a man after God's own heart. Oh yes, I'd like to be called like John the Baptist was called, not a greater born of woman than John the Baptist. Yes, I would. Oh, I'd like to be called as Moses was called upon his death. God simply said, Moses, my servant is dead. Oh, I'd like for God to say about me, as he said about Job, hast thou considered my servant Job a perfect or mature and upright man? That's mighty good. But oh, when I think about what God said about Abraham, he said, for example, in Isaiah 41, verse 8, Abraham, my friend, and in James 2:23, Abraham, friend of God, and in 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 7, the seed of Abraham, thy friend. God said, Abraham is my friend. And more than I want a PhD, and I'll never get one, and I don't want one, really, because I've seen folks that have them. And I just never have. But anyway, I just don't think I'm in trouble again. But more than I want that. More than I want to preach a convention sermon. More than I want to preach at a great meeting of preachers. More than I want anything, I'd like for God to be able to say, old Jack Hiles is my friend. He's my friend. I promised God years ago, in fact, it's been 26 years ago, on my knees at 3 o'clock one morning, down in the East Texas pine thicket, I made a vow to God that I'd be a friend of my friends. And I've not always been what I ought to be, but I've tried. Honestly, that's the truth. I've tried to be a friend of my friends. And when one of my friends is in trouble, and I know about it, I try to go to his rescue. I don't do what I ought to do, and I don't do what I want to do, and I don't do what I hope someday I will do. Oh, listen, I've learned something. 10,000 times, rather, be a friend than have a friend. And by the way, if you want to have friends, the best way is to be friends. Bible says if you want to have friends, you must first show yourself friendly. And that's not saying good morning and how do you do every morning. That's not saying good night and God bless you and glad to see you. And that's not giving a smile to somebody or dropping a dime in a bucket at the Salvation Army a kettle on a shopping in a shopping center. It is when your friend is in trouble, being able to say, yours to count on. Yours to count on. Now, let's look at the word friend for a minute. The word friend in the Greek means thine own. Or you might translate it this way, belonged ones. Or you might put it this way, those beside me. It is one who is my own. It is one who belongs to me, not necessarily by a blood relationship, but one to whom I've given myself to say yours to count on. It is mine own. It's those beside me. In the old days in Greece, they had a symbol of a true friend. That symbol was written on the garment of people, or garments of people. And if one was a true friend, it just said these words, summer and winter. That's all it said. That was the slogan. That meant I'm your friend. Summer and winter. What does it mean? It means a friend is born for adversity. That's what it means. It means a true friend. You say, oh, I wish I had one like that. I'm not preaching about that, you selfish folks that want friends. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about you folks that like to be a friend. And you'll say, I'm going to choose my friends, and my friends will have me summertime and wintertime, when it's cloudy and when it's sunshiny, when it's raining and when it's clear, when they're on top, when they're on bottom, when they're bragged, when they're complimented, or when they're slandered. Summer or winter, I'm going to be their friend. But and such a friend was given to King David. in a fellow named Hushai. H-U-S-H-I. Hushai. Hushai was David's friend. In fact, it says in 2 Samuel 15:37 these words, Hushai, David's friend. David was king at the time. And it says in 2 Samuel 16:16, Hushai, David's friend. In 2 Chronicles 27:33 it says, to Hushai, the king's companion. Now this fellow Hushai, listen carefully. This fellow Hushai was a friend of David. He was called David's friend. Now David had a counselor in Ahithophel. And David had people who were his mighty men, and men who were his warriors, men who were his comrades in battle. But it was said of Hushai, he's David's friend. And it was said it like he was David's only friend. Maybe a little better, David's big friend. There was one great special friend, bearing in mind that Jonathan was already going to heaven now, and this friend was named Hushai. It was Hushai, when David left the throne, went out to Maonaim, when his son Absalom had rebelled against him. It was Hushai that said to David, I want to go with you. And David said, no, you'd be a burden on me if you went. He's trying to talk him into staying. And Hushai did stay. And Hushai went to Absalom and said, Absalom, and he told his men, said, look, I know where David is. You can kill King David. And Absalom and his men said, where is he? And he said, down here, certain spot. And boy, Absalom got his men. The men of Absalom came and decided to go get David, the king. And Hushai was sent ahead to David and said, David, said, be sure, anywhere you are, don't be there, because that's where they think you are. And they came down, David was gone. Hushai was a friend of David, even though David was gone, was away. And I'm supposed to be a friend of Jesus, even though he's away. He's not here tonight. I'm supposed to be his friend. In the grocery store? Yeah, in the grocery store. In the restaurant? Yes, in the restaurant. I was in a restaurant out east not long ago, eating by myself. And a fellow said, Jesus Christ, G-O-D-D-A-M-N, Jesus Christ, G-O-D-D-A-M-N. And I walked over and I said, my friend, I hope you will not consider me rude. But I said, if you had a dear friend and I were saying D-A-M-N after his name, I said, what would you think? He said, I'd be very upset. And I said, you've been saying D-A-M-N after the best friend I have in the world, and I wish you wouldn't do that. He got mad at me, but thank God it didn't put the word D-A-M-N after God's name anymore. It didn't curse Jesus anymore. I'm simply saying, I want to be his friend, and if I'm going to be his friend, I've got to be his Hushai. I've got to stand for him while he was gone. But now listen to me. When David was gone and Solomon became the king, Solomon grew up under David, bear in mind that. Solomon had seen David's friend. Solomon knew David's cabinet. Did you know that Solomon wanted a friend like Hushai? And Solomon created a post on his cabinet called the friend. The friend. Like we have a Secretary of War, Solomon had a fellow called the friend. Like we have a Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Treasury, Attorney General, Secretary of and something else. I've forgotten all of them. But Solomon said, I remember my dad, he had that Hushai, and Hushai stood for him, and I recall what a friend he was. And Solomon said, I want a friend like that. So Solomon created a post on his cabinet, and the post was called Friend. And Solomon had his, and did you know that thing called up the Macedonian people? Even had a class of people that were supposed to be friends. They just choose a bunch of folks, say, you're friends. So Solomon had a friend. Now the friend, maybe he was not what Hushai was to David, but Solomon wanted a friend. And let me tell you something tonight, our Solomon wants a friend. A greater than Solomon is here, and he wants a friend. I'm a little weary of this kind of Christianity. Not a good enough friend of Jesus to say a grace out loud when you go to a public place to eat. A little weary of that. A little weary of this kind of Christianity. Has a Bible walking down the street and sticks it under like this and folds it or puts it between the newspaper. Sort of weary of that kind of Christianity. Let them call us fools and nuts, but let's don't be ashamed of the king. Let's be the king's friend. Folks, it's not us they hate, it's the king they hate. And the more we stand for the king and the better friend we become to the king, the more folks are going to hate us. I don't think we'll go around trying to make folks hate us. You know that's true. I believe in being nice and courteous and kind. And I do not advocate at all. In fact, I detest this kind of Christianity. Goes around trying to stick folks and make folks mad and being offensive and obnoxious in public. I'm not for that kind of stuff. But I am for this. I'm for not being ashamed of this book. And being ashamed of this book puts a stigma on me. I'd gladly wear the stigma. And if saying a good word about Jesus puts a stigma on me, I'd gladly wear the stigma. Why? He's gone tonight. He has no hands but our hands to do His work today. He has no feet but our feet to lead men to His way. He has no tongue but our tongue to tell men that Christ died. He has no help but our help to lead men to His side. We're the only Bible this careless world would read. We're the sinner's gospel. We're the scoffer's creed. We're the Lord's last message written in deed and word. What if the line is crooked and what if the print is blurred? What if our hands are busy with other works than His? What if our feet are leading where sin's allurement is? What if our tongues are speaking of things that Christ would spurn? How can we hope to aid Him and hasten His return? I'm a little weary. This kind of Christianity goes to the company picnic and drink and you don't drink anything, but you just don't want to be offensive to anybody. You say, I don't want to embarrass anybody. Yeah, look in the mirror and you'll find a fellow you don't want to embarrass. You folks that bet on the ball games, and you folks that listen to the dirty jokes, and you folks that share in the filth and never take a stand on the job and never tell anybody about Christ and never say prayer, never say grace out loud when you bow your head, when you eat on the job and when you're in public. Oh, you're a good Christian right here. Ah, boy, you get up and say, I'm always glad to say a good word from my Lord. Yeah, you're glad when you're here, but not when you're out there where folks need to hear a good word about the Lord. You're a little ashamed of saying about Jesus out there, aren't you? Out on the job, you're a little ashamed of saying, yesterday, today, forever, Jesus is the same. All may change, but Jesus never. Glory to His name. You know what's wrong with us? We don't have this thing of Christianity down below here. It's not on the inside. It's not in the subconscious yet. I think I told you maybe. I was down in Decatur, Georgia a year ago. Stayed in a motel, Ramada Inn or something, in Decatur, Georgia. And I had a newspaper walking down the street, and I had that little song, you know, get the new look from the old book, get the new look from the Bible, get the new look from the old book, you know, get the new look from God's Word, inward look, outward look, upward look from the old book. And in the church here, we used to sing it. We had a little craze for a while of singing it, and we'd sing, get the new look from the old book, raise your Bible up high, get the new look from the Bible, get the new look from the old book, get the new look from God's Word, an inward look and the outward look and the upward look from the old book. I had a newspaper in my hand and didn't even know I was humming. I didn't know what I was doing walking down the street, and I got humming that song, da 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 da. And I had a Atlanta Constitution newspaper in my hand, or Atlanta Journal one. I was walking down the street and I had that thing in my hand, and it was rolled up like this, and I was going da 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 on the highway, da 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 da. And a fellow stopped his car and he said, hey fellow, what's wrong with you? And I didn't even know what I was doing. He said, you trying to sell that paper? And I said, no. No, I'm not. I said, it's a song we sing where I go to church. You'd have said, no, I'm losing weight. And I said, no, it's a song we sing. I said, it has to do with the Bible. We hold the Bible up. And every time we talk about you get the new from the old book, I taught him the song. And he laughed and laughed, and I laughed, and he got saved, and I laughed some more. And he said, why? I don't know why. Because it's down below here. It's in the subconscious mind, you see. Now, yours is Winston tastes good like a cigarette should. But that's not me, brother. Not me. I'm simply saying that a friend. Now, I'm not saying you ought to go around telling folks they're going to go to hell, but you ought to go around saying, I will not be ashamed of Jesus. I'll not be ashamed on the job. I'll not be ashamed at home. I'll not be ashamed at school. I'll not be ashamed at play. I'll not be ashamed at work. I'll not be ashamed in the office. I'll not be ashamed on the bench. I'll not be ashamed. He's my Savior, and I'm going to be a friend of Jesus. This word, friend, something else about this word, friend. Did you know this word, friend, is a masculine word? It's a masculine word. It is mentioned 26 times in the New Testament, 25 times it's masculine, and one time it's feminine. What does that mean? I mean, this word friend is a strong word, a masculine word. It's not a friend, a quiet. It's friend. Be a friend of Jesus. Be a strong friend. It's a masculine word that lends itself to action and doing something for God. Be a friend to Jesus. Now, how can I be that? How can I be the King's friend? You need not turn to it because of time, but I think I will. Over in John chapter 15, it has some words. It has some scriptures about being a friend to Jesus. For example, it says in verse 12, "This is my commandment, that ye love one another. As I have loved you, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I have commanded you." And back in, let me just give you a few things it says here. In the first place, if we're a friend to the King, we've got to be a friend to the King's sons. He said, "I command you that as I have loved you, so ought you to love one another." What's he saying? He's saying, if you're my friend, be a friend to all my kids. Brother Vineyard, you think a fellow will come down to your house and take your boys, punch them in the nose, kick them in the teeth, and say, "Brother Vineyard, you're the finest preacher I know." You'd say, "The finest preacher you know is about to punch you in the finest nose I ever saw." And of course you would. Knowing you like I do, you'd probably get a gun and shoot him right through the gizzard. Knowing Brother Fist like I do, he'd say, "Oh, come on, don't do that anymore." But I, either that or naughty, naughty. But you won't be a friend of me. You spit on Dave Hiles, don't you mess with me. You criticize Dave Hiles, then you're on my list. Why? He's my son. And I wouldn't have any respect for anybody. It wouldn't be that way. That's what the Lord said. That's why these poor, dumb liberals this morning stood up and said, "Jehovah God, Jehovah God." Jesus is not the Son of God to them. He's not the virgin-born Son of God to them. And they're talking about, "The Lord is in His holy temple." And God says, "Shut up! Away with thy vials! They stink in my nostrils! You're not going to have me if you don't have my son." No, you can't have God if you don't have His son. So you folks tonight, you think you're God's child because you believe there's a God somewhere. No, you're God's child because you treat His son right. And His son gave His life for you on the cross, and you come to His son and say, "I trust you as my Savior." And the Son says, "Hey, let me introduce you to my Father now." And then you become a child of God. Why? Because you come through the Son. Now, that means if you don't treat God's children right. Now, you can be a Christian and not treat God's children right. But you can't be a friend of God and mistreat His children. Don't you recall when, after Saul and Jonathan had died, David called Ziba, his servant, to his side and said, "Is there anybody here in the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" And Ziba said, "Yes, a little fellow named Mephibosheth, I think about 13 years of age. He lives down in Lodibar in the house of Amiel, the son of Machir, little crippled fellow." Was crippled when he was a little beginner boy. When the enemy came and his nurse took him and dropped him as she fled the city, and he was crippled. And he's the son of Jonathan. And David said, "Go down." And Dave, that's pretty personal, isn't it? Said, "Go down and Lodibar and bring him up here. I'm going to treat him like he's my own son." And for the son of Jonathan, to the son of Jonathan, David acted like his own son. Don't you recall when Barzillai was a friend of David, when David left the city of Jerusalem, was going down to Mahanaim, and Barzillai, the old man, 80 years of age, came and brought beds and victuals and food for all of David's men when they were away from Jerusalem and away from the palace and hungry with no place to sleep. Barzillai came and brought them something to eat and a place to sleep. When David died, he told Solomon, he said, "Now, son, don't you forget Barzillai's sons. You take care of them, and you bring them to the palace, and you let them be as one of your own sons." What's he saying? He's saying, David said, "He treated me right, so I'll treat his sons right." Now, if you appreciate what God's done for you, you're going to love God's children. We kid a great deal. But I love these men on the platform like they're my own brothers. And you won't find a group of men in the entire world that have a closer, sweeter fellowship and harmony than we have together. I mean that. We don't know what it is to fuss with each other. And I don't know what it is to have disloyalty on the part of men like this. These are the finest men I know, and I wouldn't trade these men for any crowd this number in the entire world. I wouldn't trade them for eight or twice as many like this. I wouldn't trade them. Well, I'd sell them for $2.5 million, but but I wouldn't trade them. No, I wouldn't. I love them. I love them. Well, let's suppose tonight that I was unkind to Brother Fisk, and I only kiddingly, you understand that. I love Brother Fisk. The Bible says you're supposed to comfort the feeble-minded, and I do love Brother Fisk. But I am. Brother Fisk, if I'm supposed to love him and treat him right, why? Because he's one of God's kids. And I can't be a friend of the king if I mistreat his kids. If I were to hear something about some preacher brother, or any Christian for that matter, and criticize them or spread a rumor, then I couldn't be a friend of the king, because I'd be criticizing one of the king's friends or sons. I want to be a friend of the king. Because I do want to be a friend of the king, I've got to love his people. And I must not sit in judgment against his people. I mean this tonight. If God knows my heart, I wouldn't lift up that hand if I could against any one of God's children. And you know that's the truth. And many of our folks are that way. I'm simply saying, they're God's children. Away with criticism. Away with gossip. Away with slander. Away with treating each other unkindly. By the way, you gossips, and you can laugh and snicker if you want to, you long-tongued Jezebels and Ahabs, go ahead. But you mark it down. You may go to heaven, but you won't be a friend of the king on the way, because you're not treating his children right. But you say, you don't know what his children did to me. Yeah, but I don't know that, but I know what you did to the Father and his Son. I know what you did to Jesus. You drove nails in his hands and put him on a cross. Put a spear in his side and a crown of thorns on his head. I want to be a friend to the king. And if I'm going to be a friend to the king, I must be a friend to his sons. There's something else. It says, greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friend. That means if I'm going to be a friend to the king, I've got to say, dear king, I'll die for you. I'll die for you. I don't want to die. God knows I don't want to die. But I'd rather die than turn back. And I'd rather die than compromise. And I have a lot of folks who don't like me, and a lot of folks that make certain threats about me. But I tell you what, I mean this. I don't want to die, but I've already counted the cost. And I'm ready if I have to. And if somebody walks up to me, I've already made my mind up. It's already made up. Say, hey, cut your friend. I told a man last week that had enough money that he could take care of all our needs here. I said, if you ask me to trim my sermon one word, I said, if you ask me to change a but to an and, or an a to an and, I'd say thy money perish with thee. I don't want your money. Take it and jump in the creek after it. Did I say that? Now? No, I'm simply saying, I've made up my mind. I'm a fundamentalist. I believe this book. I've counted the cost. I've already checked to see how much it's going to cost. And if needs be, I'm willing not to happen to die. I wouldn't go up and say, oh boy, I get to die for Jesus. I'd probably say, good night, I'm scared to death. But I'm ready to, I'm going to go if I have to. I'm willing to say, Jesus, I'll die for you. Or I'll live for you if need to be, whatever you need the most. I want to be your friend. There's something else. In verse 14 it says, he's my friend. Whosoever is my friend, if he doeth my commandments. Now you can be saved and say, what's wrong with so-and-so? But you can't be his friend and do that. You might be saved and wrap your finger around a cigarette, but you can't be his friend and do that. You might be saved and have some evil thoughts and tell some dirty stories and even thumb through a Playboy magazine, but you can't be his friend and do that. You might be saved and watch the little dirty, rotten, trashy soap operas in the afternoon, but you can't be his friend and do that. You might be saved and go to Hollywood movies, but you can't be his friend and do that. I'm simply saying, I want to be his friend, and if I'm his friend, whatever he asks me to do, that's what I'm going to have to do. I have in one of my books these words, a request from a friend is a royal command. A request from a friend is a royal command. I mentioned a while ago these good men. I was standing right over here in the empty building one night talking to some men about the air conditioning here. By the way, the air conditioning's turned off for the winter. We thought winter was here. But the choir was practicing. Then Brother Fisk and I and three men, air conditioning men, were standing over here. Maybe Bob Olson was there. I reached my pocket to get some of this little stuff, you know, that you put on your tongue, and reached my pocket, and it was gone. And so the next Saturday night, Brother Fisk came. We have an appointment on Saturday night, every Saturday night, and he came in. As he started to leave, he said, "Preacher, here's some of that stuff for your breath." And next week I bought him some stuff for his bad odor under his arms. Now what is it? It was my need. Whatever I need. It doesn't matter what I need. Wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter at all. If I said tonight, it would matter what it was. If I said, "Boy, these shoes sure are tight on my feet," I'd have some new shoes tomorrow. And they'd match this suit too from one of these men. Right, fellow? These shoes sure are tight on my feet. No, they're not. But I mean, I don't have any need that people who love me wouldn't supply. Did you know that's the way I want to be about Jesus? If he has a need, I want to supply it. I was down at the store of the Lord. And one of the sweetest things about the store of the Lord is the way those people spoil John R. Rice. Boy, his tea glass can get one quarter empty. And those workers butt their heads over who's going to pour the tea glass full again. And one of the sweetest things. Why? They want to be a friend of the boss. That's why. I want to be a friend of the boss, too. Doesn't satisfy me just to be saved and going to heaven. Doesn't satisfy me just to know that I'm ready to die. Doesn't satisfy me just to... Can you go to hell because you smoke? Good night. Why don't you rise above stuff like that? Why don't you say, "I want to be his friend. I'll be a friend to him who died for me. How happy then my life would be. I'll be his friend." And there's a fourth thing, quickly. And that is, Jesus said in John chapter 15, and I don't think I can quote this last verse, and so I'm going to read it to you. He says in John chapter 15, and I think it's verse 15, yes. "Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I've called you friends, for all things that I've heard of my Father, I've made known unto you." He said, "You're my friend? What? If you treat my children right. You're my friend? The king's friend? What? If you love one another. You're the king's friend? What? You're the king's friend if you lay down your life. You're the king's friend if you do his commandments, but you're also the king's friend if you let him in on everything. On everything." I recall going out to Hessville to a house to visit, and every preacher's here has done this before. And I went up to ring the doorbell, and one little girl hollered at him and said, "Mama, that God man's here!" And I'm not the God man, but at least they didn't put that other word in between, you know. And the God man's here! And the mother said, she didn't know I heard her, "Oh, why did he have to come now?" I look afraid. I look through the door. She did look afraid. And so she said, "And this house is a mess. Why does he have to come now?" And so she said, "Hurry, hurry, hurry. Shut the door to the den. Shut the door to the den." And I looked back, and there was the den. Newspapers all over the place. I mean, had empty Pepsi Cola bottles. And it was a sight and a mess. And there's the kitchen over here. "I shut the kitchen door." Dishes in the sink and dishes on the floor and a dog eating in there in the kitchen. And then she shut the door to the kitchen, and she said, "Shut the door to the bedroom." But bedroom was over here. I turned and looked through the bedroom. She didn't know I was looking. And that bed's run made, and clothes on the floor. Looked like a typical teenager's bedroom. And so she closed all the doors, and she got the living room. Oh, the living room was just real nice. And then she came, and she did this twice in the mirror. I don't know if that helps. If it does, I wish she'd done it five or six times. But she came to the door, and she said, "Oh, Pastor, I'm so glad to see you." "Oh, you dirty liar, you." She said, "Won't you come in?" And I said, "My, what a nice place you have. I said, this is a beautiful room. Thank you. We try to keep it up best we can. And I said, could you take me on a tour of this house? I'd like to see this whole house. Oh. That's sort of the way you are, isn't it? Huh? Hey, Lord! Lord, come in! But stay in the living room. Don't come to my music room. I got rock records back there, hypocrite. Don't come inside the reading room. I got some Cosmopolitan magazines in there. Hypocrite. Oh, don't come in the den because I've got John's other concubine on. Hypocrite. You know what? You'll be a lot happier, especially when I'm preaching, if you'll just clean up all the house. If you just come and say, dear Lord, and I'm glad. Years ago I did this. I said, dear Lord, whole house is yours. Now, I'm not much preacher, but that's the truth, and God knows it. Whole house is yours. Dear Lord, I want you to come in all of it. I want you to hear the songs I sing. I don't want you to hear the tune, but I want you to hear the songs I sing. Lord, you can look over my shoulder and read every book I read. And Lord, you can join along and sing with me on all the songs I sing. Are you his friend tonight? Huh? In a room in your house? Don't you recall back yonder in Ezekiel? It talks about these men of God, the leaders, so-called men of God, these leaders. And it said that on the outside, oh, they looked mighty good. But it said on the inside, they had some chambers called the chambers of their imagery. And said back in those chambers were all kinds of idols and wicked stuff. What you got in your chamber tonight?